Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Palace Way podcast. I'm not going to make the Lorraine joke again, but no, it is not Bruno, unfortunately. It is me, Alex. And I'm pleased to welcome back Pat to the podcast. Pat, how you been?
Been good. Not a great weekend for my local Tampa Bay Rowdies, but a good weekend for Crystal Palace and ready to talk about it.
I know, 7 wins in 9 in the Premier League, 9 and 11 in all competitions. A very, very good run at the moment and very good time to be a Palace fan. Long may it last. Before I move on, Pat, can I just ask about your t-shirt? Because, I mean, listeners won't be able to see it, but you're wearing something very USMNT. I have a tongue twister that, but you know what I mean. Take me through it.
Yeah, 2021 Nations League final, Pulisic penalty in extra time, converted it, upper 90, went to the supporters, Mexican fans not happy, throwing beer bottles, and Pulisic being Pulisic, shushing the crowd. Hopefully I painted a nice picture for you, dear listener. But yeah, a great moment for USA soccer history. Kind of our moment where we officially stood up above Mexico, and we haven't looked back since. So happy, happy days.
Yeah, good memories if you're American. Honestly, it's the most kind of like America thing you've done on this show, to be honest, Pat. So I have to give it to you. It's taken this long for something like that to come out. So I'm kind of proud of you in a really weird, weird way. But Bobby, we'll bring you back in here as well. Really, really good to have you back. But I think you're a man who needs no introduction to Palace fans. Everyone knows the great work you're doing for the New Shopper. But again, pleased to welcome you back as a friend to the pod. Bobby, how you been?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Thanks for having me back on and looking forward to getting into it. I don't think it is the first America thing that Pat's done on the pod, because the occasional mention of soccer really emphasizes that he is it's a true American.
You guys coined that word. You can read the book Soccernomics, good book, and they coin it that it was the term used equally in England with soccer and football. And then when you found out that we were using it, you got tired of using it. So it's like a you being bitter at us thing. And I'll gladly wear it, because if I'm talking with, it depends on who I'm talking to. I'll use it interchangeably. You gave it to us. Not, we didn't steal it.
Yeah, I think so. When the game was first developed, it was soccer, wasn't it?
Something like, yeah. It's a pretty interesting story. But
are you an American football fan as well, Pat, or not really?
Yeah, I played small school American football through college, so up until I was about 21, 22 years old. So yeah, I'm definitely still a fan.
But Bobby, we'll start with you. There's been a lot that we've missed since we last had you on the show. I'm particularly talking about the FA Cup run. Obviously, you know, a fairly even draw, I think, in terms of initial impressions that we had as fans when it came out. But that route to Wembley is now just 90 minutes away, depending on what happens at Craven Cottage. So I just want to get your initial reaction to that game and that draw.
Well, yeah, Bruno's had a busy weekend. He's been at Sabrina Carpenter. So in the spirit of that, I'm going to say, please, please, please take me to Wembley. on a serious note, yes, 90 minutes from Wembley. It's going to be a very, very tough game. Fulham are a good side. I know Palace were somewhat dominant in the game at Craven Cottage, but you also have to think back to the game at Selhurst Park, and it was the exact opposite of that, and Fulham dominated that day. I think now you're so close, you just want to get to Wembley and have that day out. I think there's the squad are really building up as that as being a kind of season-defining game in a sense. Get to Wembley, and that's a true achievement. Oliver Glasner told the team at the start of the season that if the gaffer has one wish, it's to get to Wembley, because he's never played there before. And it's going to be a huge occasion at Craven Cottage. The win over Millwall, obviously the Mateta incident overshadowed it, but it was quite a formality. I think it was pretty simple for Palace that day, taking that goal out of it. I thought it was quite dominant, the first half especially. And yeah, we'll look forward to a big game at Craven Cottage.
No, absolutely. It's been a great start to the season. And I say that start, it's like we're not in March already. But when you really look back and think about the bigger picture here, we've beaten both of our rivals. Whatever happens at home to Brighton, like, we'll always have that. We've definitely beaten both of our biggest rivals this season. We're 90 minutes from Wembley. In the league, we're looking like quite comfortably on target to get our best ever points tally, and maybe even our best ever finish. We'll save the Europe chat for later. We're going to call it the E word, because I'm sick of the sort of the ooh-ah about it. So I think we'll keep it as a bit of a touchy word for now. So yeah, the E word is something that's still hotly debated, but again, definitely something that we should be looking at. It's been a very, very interesting season so far. And yeah, excited to talk about that later. But there are more pressing things, unfortunately. We have to get on to the here and now, which I know we'd love to go into dreamland and talk about the future, but a very, very important win against Ipswich. Not the prettiest, plenty of big chances spurned. But I mean, Pat, I'll bring you in here. I mean, particularly in an offensive sense. I think Ipswich looked particularly strong just on personnel, but I mean, what were your expectations going into that game in terms of how the two teams would really match up against each other?
Yeah, you know, I still, despite the injuries that we had, the important key players that we had out, I still was expecting to take all 3 points. And, you know, McKenna's a good manager, and I expect him to have a good game plan, and he seemed to. He really wanted to kind of exploit that space behind our wingbacks, you know, particularly on our right side. If there is anywhere you want to attack, it's kind of that space behind Munoz when he pushes forward, where it's a little bit in front of Richards, it's a little bit to the outside of whoever's playing in the central midfield areas. It's kind of a good spot for the ball. And they tried that particularly in the beginning of the match. And Richard seemed to be up for the challenge and answer that call. And we closed a lot of that down. But they did have some attacking moments. They played good football. And overall, I think when you're out, you're the ninth leading goal scorer in the Premier League in Jean-Philippe Mateta. When you're out, your most consistent midfielder this year in Will Hughes, you're going to expect it to be a little bit sloppy. You're going to expect it to be a little bit out of control. And that's what you saw. Both clubs wanted to play on the counter, so you saw a lot of direct play that just kind of went nowhere after one or two touches. And at the end of the day, we still put enough chances to win the match and converted enough to win. So I think we should be happy.
No, overall, quite a positive result. I mean, all things considered, it was 3 points that we've said before on this pod that we had to get if we were even serious about the big E word, and that's not withstanding the main issue here. But, you know, it wasn't pretty. We got the job done. I think that is the top line, but there's so much more to unpack. I mean, you talked about a lack of control, but one moment that certainly didn't lack control was the big chance we had at only about 3 minutes in, where Adam Wilson plays a lovely, lovely Trivella pass to Nketiah, you know, outside of the boot, flick on, perfect weight, perfect line split. The centre backs could just watch it fly to him. I mean, what did you make of the pass, first of all? Because let's be honest, it's divinely beautiful. I don't think we need to say too much more than that. But particularly about Eddie Nketiah's big miss there against Alex Palmer 1v1.
It's what you're expecting from Adam Wharton, and it's what we missed for, you know, first half of the season. Again, he created the most chances in this match, had the most progressive passes. He's just continually putting the ball, advancing it up pitch, putting it into more dangerous positions and advantageous spots for the rest of Crystal Palace. And yeah, I mean, we were definitely not clinical in front of goal, and Nketiah definitely played a part of that. That one in particular was one of five big chances, which is around 0.4 XG or higher, so likely to score that we had in that match, and we scored one of them. So we didn't really convert the way we should have, but I still think Nketiah did a good job in his performance. He moved well. He seemed to find the space. He seemed to be aggressive when he tried to get a shot off. He was getting shots off, and you know, he still hasn't had a run of starts consistently in years. This is the first time he's played this many minutes in this short period of time in a while. So I think it's going to take him some time to get to speed, but I think we can be optimistic for what we saw.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Bobby, I mean, my flatmate, as I mentioned on this pod, is a huge Arsenal fan, and he was just saying to me about how much of a confidence player he is, and just that 8 or 9 game run that he had at Arsenal, where he was scoring for fun. I mean, do you go along with that? Do you think this is purely an issue of confidence and consistency, and or do you think there's a deeper lying issue of quality there with Nketiah?
I don't think there's a issue of quality there with Eddie Nketiah. He's a top quality forward. Maybe he suits playing in a second striker system, and it's more a systematic thing, but there's no question of his quality and what he could offer Palace in the long term. Remember, he has got a long-term deal at the club, so he's not a player, you know, he's just gonna write him off after one slightly dodgy season. We were all singing his praises after Millwall and after Aston Villa. And I actually thought, besides the miss, he did pretty well against Ipswich. At times, Palace played as though Mateta was still up front, which obviously doesn't suit his game. But when he got the ball, he looks okay. If you look at the chance he set up for Eze, that was a really good moment where he turned into a creator, threaded Eze through. Eze couldn't quite get the finish. It was a good block from the Ipswich defender. And yeah, on the whole, I thought Eddie did quite well. He dropped into midfield at times. He shifted the ball from left to right. And I thought he looked competent. It wasn't anything special, but I thought it was an okay performance for Eddie Nketiah. And if anyone reads anything more into that one game against Ipswich, I think they'd be rudely mistaken.
I mean, he's what, 25? You think about Mateta at 25, he was only really just starting to find a bit of form, and even then he wasn't exploding like he is now. That's much more recent. So, you know, even though he's not in his development years in Nketiah, I mean, there's nothing to say that we can't see another late explosion potentially, and particularly with the right coaching. You know, I think we saw enough to see that there is a complete striker in there somewhere. It is just a question of, like I say, composure, decision making, and sometimes just confidence and luck.
Absolutely, but it also goes beyond confidence. If you look at a striker, the most important thing for a number nine is to be playing consecutive games, like a spell of 10, 15 games. This is how we see the best strikers when they're starting regularly. Eddie Nketiah has not had that this season. He had 70 minutes against an inferior Millwall, and he had 5 minutes against Aston Villa in his last two games where he scored, and that was good for his confidence. Yes, it was a tap-in, but to actually read the play, get to the back post, it was a proper poacher's finish. And as with his goal against Millwall, I mean, what a quality finish. The header was immaculate, looped straight into the top corner, no questions about it, from deep into the penalty area. It was a great finish. And we will start to see the quality of Eddie Nketiah the more he's given opportunities, and as you rightfully say, the more his confidence improves.
Yeah, and to add to that, just looking at all the players that have been under Glasner and how he's improved them. Look at where Will Hughes is now compared to when Glasner first came on. Look at even Sarr. He's had, a small amount of time with him starting consistently, which is important, as Bobby's saying, getting those minutes. And he's a completely different player, completely improved from when he was when we signed him in August. So I think having Glasner here as a manager and having that raw ability, even if it does need to be refined a little bit with Nketiah or just needed to get simply more minutes, having Glasner with him to bring him along on that journey is definitely something that makes you positive, looking forward to the future.
No, definitely. I mean, I think there's plenty of positives there. I mean, one thing I want to raise with you, Pat, is if you look at our goal scorer list, we have now 7 for Ismaïla Sarr in second, and then in first 12 for Jean-Philippe Mateta in the league. I mean, a bit of a quiz here, really. We have two players on 3 goals apiece. I mean, who do you think they are?
No, Munoz is one, right?
Yeah, Munoz is one. Who's the other with 3
Yeah.
goals?
I feel like isn't I feel like Eze is like a trap here. Is it just Eze? Am I being obvious? I'm
No,
just
it's
the
not
obvious.
Eze. It's not
Yeah,
Eze. No,
it's
you're
okay.
right.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Three goals. Is it in no. It's Lacroix, right?
Nope, Mark Gay.
Okay,
Close.
there you go.
So Mark
Yeah.
Gay, so you actually look at that list. Our joint third highest strikers are both defenders. Now, that's not a crime. It's very good that they're scoring 6 goals between two defenders this season. That's not bad at all. But there is an issue here of consistency and over-reliance on these two players. And I think with Mateta out, I think particularly in terms of that clinical ability to finish chances, we did miss something. So, Pat, do you think there's just briefly just a danger of A, over-reliance, and B, the need for some players to step up, particularly players like Eze, who I think definitely should be contributing more offensively?
Yeah, Eze has underperformed his shooting metrics all season, and it's odd because it's really the first time that he's ever done it in his career. He's always been somebody to overperform them. So he's not, simply put, not making the shots that he's, quote, supposed to be making, unquote. You would think that he'd be have a moment where he's going to go back to the player that he's been, but we keep waiting for that moment, waiting for that moment, waiting for that moment. And yeah, seeing it, Sarr picking these goals up lately has been a huge bonus for us. Munoz starting to get in that attacking position and come up. So yeah, I think if we continue to have Munoz and Sarr perform the way they have, with especially now with Wharton feeding them the ball, we can rely on those goals. But Eze does need to step up. The one thing I'll say that's the bigger picture here, though, is we don't need all of these goal scorers when we have one of the best, most organized, most disciplined defensive back fives, back threes in the entire league. I mean, we are not conceding many chances. We are not conceding many goals. We are keeping ourselves in matches, such as we saw against Ipswich, in matches where we're not bringing our best performance offensively. We're not as clean and crisp as we are. We still can expect to be in those matches, try and eke out a goal and steal 3 points because we have such a sound defense where we can keep clean sheets.
I mean, you have to say that's the foundation of any sustainable success. And again, I've said the E word. We'll get onto that in due course because I think there's lots to say there. But I wanted to go back to Ipswich because I think looking away from the more broad issues, I think there was still plenty to pick out from that game. I mean, Dean Henderson, I think again, as someone we've sung to the heavens in terms of praise, and I think it's a remarkable turnaround from some of his earlier form and fan opinion. Bobby, I'll bring you back in. Made an excellent save to tonight, Jaden Philogene in the first half, not long after Nketiah made his big miss. But throughout, looked quite confident in even some very, very hairy situations. What did you make of his overall performance?
Yeah, as everyone probably knows, if they listen to the podcast regularly or follow me on Twitter, I've always been a Dean Henderson fan. When opinion was against him, I always said that he would come good. For the fee that they signed him for, was pretty exceptional value. The plan was to always make him Crystal Palace's number one, to move on Sam Johnson, make that pure profit, because obviously he was signed on a free transfer. And it couldn't have worked out much better for Palace. Alongside his excellent performance against Ipswich, which at times kept Palace in the game, he made sure the Eagles kept that clean sheet. He's just the leader, and more importantly, he gets it. He gets the football club. He gets what it means to be a Crystal Palace player. He knows what's expected from him. He's spoken to the media after the game and just said that my role here is to be the footballer the manager wants me to be, and just show my quality. And he feels it's something he's been doing, and I couldn't agree more. I think he's got a great shot now with a New England manager coming in Thomas Tuchel, to maybe make a claim to be England number one. Jordan Pickford hasn't really put a foot wrong for England, so it's going to be a tough feat. And he's going to have to really show his quality leading into the World Cup. But he's had some good conversations with Thomas Tuchel, as he said in his interview this week. And his aim is to pick up as many caps for his country and certainly in the league. And as with that performance against Ipswich, he showed that ability in tremendous fashion.
No, definitely. I mean, we talked about leadership at the back, but that starts from the goalkeeper. I mean, there has to be a lot said for that. A very, very encouraging performance. And, three clean sheets in what, five games, I think? So that's, I mean, that's pretty impressive in the league in terms of form. It's something that, he's
Four
only
consecutive.
going up and up in terms of his tally. And
I
yeah.
think an even more impressive stat is four consecutive clean sheets away from home. I mean, going away from home isn't simple. And I mean, he's been superb in every game. Some games he's not had much to do because of how strong Palace have been, both going forwards and defensively. I just think he's an outstanding keeper. As you mentioned, the Philogene save so early on in the game was exquisite, the way he got down and denied that. He made another good save from Nseko. It's one you would expect him to save, but actually when you looked at one of the other angles, it was a much tougher save than it looked at first glance. And as I say, I just think he sets the standard from goal, and he gives the whole team so much confidence. I think his kicking, albeit it's not his finest asset, has certainly improved as the season's gone on. And if you look back to earlier on in the season when Palace were struggling, those little points that Palace picked up, he was so crucial in earning them and keeping them into games. I think back to the Man United game when both Onana and Henderson had probably two superb games. Both of them were the two best players on the pitch. And those fine margins in games he offers you just carries those points over the line, and a superb addition to the squad. And this season, he's really stepped up and showed his quality.
What I find really interesting is when you look at goal difference overall, sorry, goals against, apologies. We're on 33 and 11, but you look at the teams that are immediately above us in Fulham in 10th, Newcastle in 9th, Bournemouth, Villa, and so on. They're all significantly higher than us. Admittedly, Bournemouth only by one, but the rest all by at least three or four goals. In the case of Villa, they've conceded almost, what, yeah, nine goals more than us at this point in the season. I mean, it's just crazy when you think about it, and that has to go down partially to him. I mean, the way the backline operate is a revelation, and you include him. I mean, it's a really complete foundation, isn't it?
Only Forest, Liverpool, and Arsenal have conceded more goals than Palace this season. Dean Henderson is right up there, among the best goalkeepers in the league for clean sheets. And as I've already said, and as you've mentioned, he's just a excellent player. And I don't even think he's reached his ceiling. That's the thing. I think he can get better and better. I mentioned his feet, if he can keep improving with that. And Glasner is a good coach, and obviously Dean Kiely is a superb goalkeeping coach. Then Palace have got a really top goalkeeper on their hands. With the fee they signed him for, potentially you could look in a couple of years to make some profit on him, or he could go down and be one of Palace's best number ones and stay at the club for the rest of his career.
No, definitely. The future's bright there. I want to look more at the front end of the pitch. We talked about an over-reliance on Mateta and Sarr, but I think particularly for the latter, Pat, there's a positive spin here, isn't there? I think Sarr, despite a lot of missed chances and eventually getting the winning goal, I mean, he still had a very, very good game overall and was a constant threat. I mean, what did you make of him offensively against Ipswich overall?
Sorry, he continues to play this direct attacking style that really seems to fit this system. And yeah, with Ipswich playing much deeper and not trying to engage in a high line, not trying to give much space behind for us to attack, he didn't seem to really find his way making those runs, timing them right, getting onto the ball correctly. for the first 60 minutes or so, but the move to the middle for the last however many minutes that was, 15, 20, when he moved to the middle, played in that central kind of attacking role, it seemed to fit him better. And I think it was your point, Alex, that it looked very similar to the Mateta goal in the reverse fixture, right? So just getting behind, using his strength, and just getting onto a ball, and a lovely, lovely little bit of touch to get it over the keeper. I thought it was a really composed goal, and I love the celebration. I'll just throw that out there. Absolutely love that celebration.
Oh, I mean, you could put it on a t-shirt, couldn't you? It's such a nice tribute. Still wish him well in his recovery, of course.
I really liked it. I thought it showed the togetherness and the tight-knitted nature of the group. Sar and Mateta are very close, and I just think it was a nice tribute. You have to remember, this is a guy who has had surgery, was rushed to hospital on the football pitch, can't play for 2 weeks because of concussion protocol. And I just thought it was a nice touch, really, showing that they did it for Mateta, and in his absence, someone stepped up. But it was the acknowledgement that actually he is a focal point of the team, and let's win this game for JP, and give him a nice bit of respect.
Not to sound like a ballet instructor, I have to criticise Sarr's poise, though. This is by far the biggest negative I have about Sarr. His leg stick out just wasn't doing it for me when he hit the corner flag, you see. Mateta's got it on lock. I think Sarr needs to work on his technique just a little bit more. But I think as far as, Erez Meyer goes, I think it was a pretty decent attempt. So a pretty good moment, right? There was one thing I wanted to actually follow up on. It's a bit of an aside, really, but I'm just worried that Bruno and I, we recorded the last episode immediately after the game. It was great to get some instant reaction, which was really different. But, I basically just went off on one on a bit of a sternly worded rant about the actual moment from a Liam Roberts perspective, and talked a bit about the injury. But of course, we haven't had you guys on since that moment. So, Bobby, I think just want to bring you in about the injury. It was unclear when we recorded as to whether he'd actually need to undergo concussion protocols at the time. So in terms of the injury itself, where I think if you look, you can see his ear is partially severed at the top and hanging off a bit. We talked about the idea of, would he need surgery? Would we, potentially be looking at that route? And, I just wanted to get your general kind of feedback on things like recovery time, the nature of the injury, the concussion protocol in particular, and whether he'd need to see that out and when we can expect him to be back by.
Yeah, well, I spoke to the match manager at half time just to try and find out the protocols, if you like. And he said to me that he was used as a concussion substitute. So that meant both sides would get six subs in the game. And then my understanding of that is if you are taking off as a concussion substitute, you have to serve the two, I think it's 2 weeks, concussion protocol. Which means not kicking footballs. My understanding is that he will go to Marbella with the squad and do some individual training. I assume that will be without a ball and just remaining fit, that kind of thing. And the aim is, as Oliver Glasner revealed in his press conference on Friday, for Jean-Philippe Mateta to return against Fulham in the FA Cup, which will be massive for Palace. He's a crucial player. He's the focal point. He's the goal scorer, and he's a player you need for a spot at Wembley, so it will be big to have him back for that FA Cup game. I think some of the discourse that has maybe surrounded it towards Liam Roberts has been quite unfair. It's, split of the moments. He's made the wrong decision. It's almost like he's gone with his foot because he didn't want to hurt himself, rather than going with his head. Mateta had kind of backed away, and the follow through was unacceptable. But in those split second things, professional football players, once you've made that decision, it's very hard to get out of it. He's rushed out quickly, a lot of adrenaline pumping, and it's just a really, really poor decision. I don't think it was anything more than that. I don't think there was any more intent to it. But I feel sorry for the goalkeeper with some of the hate he's had towards him. There's no place in the game. But that being said, a 6-game ban was probably fair, and I think the FA got that one right.
Yeah, I think it's a fair assessment. I mean, I did say at the time, as much as I was pretty outraged about the nature of the injury, I kind of disagree about the intent of it and the need for it. I think, it was a needlessly high boot, for instance, but I can see that there's an accidental angle.
I agree with you. I was sat in the press box. I was dead in line with it. If that hits him dead on the face, that's career ending, or it could be life endangering. As Parrish rightfully put, I don't think it was right for Parrish to make the comment he did straight off the incident. He would have been very angry himself. Emotions are high right in the middle of a game, so I don't think that really helps the discourse. But the nature of what he says is right, and it. Yeah, It angered me. I agree with you on that one. I didn't like it at all. It was a horrible couple of minutes, and the rest of the game, as I mentioned earlier, it was massively overshadowed by that incident and people worrying about JP. And testament to the players on the pitch, really, for staying as professional as they did. You know, that could have really shaken them, but they made sure they got the job done for JP, and then they worried about the repercussions afterwards.
No, exactly. I think the good thing is, I think now that we've recorded this, the situation is much more clear. I think, like you say, I didn't disagree with anything Parrish said. I didn't even disagree with the emotions. I think it was just the timing, you know, mid-match to come out with that interview. It's going to pour, you know, fuel on what is already a pretty burning fire from a Palace perspective. So I think that's
Yeah,
very fair.
I do agree, but when you say things like the lad needs to have a long, hard look at himself, it just doesn't help when you know the reaction's going to be hate anyway. If you've got a chairman of a football club coming up with strong comments like that towards a professional who has made a mistake, it just doesn't help the discourse.
I think that's a fair point. Yeah, a bit of a somber note. Just one thing before I wrap up a bit about Mateta. We kind of talked about the saga anyway, so I won't go into detail too much. I think we've all seen it back. We know it was good. Bobby, just to clarify on the Mateta situation, so he'll miss 2 weeks in terms of the games, then, not just 2 weeks generally. So he'll miss. You think he'll miss Southampton or Brighton? I wanted to clarify that.
No, because the FA Cup game's first.
Oh,
He should
sorry, I'm being silly.
be back for Fulham.
Sorry, I keep forgetting it's the other way around, you know, in my head. In my head, I forget how long we've got because you mentioned the Marbella camp, and then obviously with the Newcastle Cup final being rearranged as well, that gives us an extra week, doesn't it? It's essentially a
But yeah, the
3 week.
Marbella camp is when the Newcastle away game should have been. So Monday to Friday, the Newcastle game should have been on Saturday. And then we go into the international break. England play Albania on the Friday. And Latvia on the Monday, and then players from an England perspective will start to return Tuesday, Wednesday. Daniel Munoz and Jefferson Lerma, should they both be called up for Colombia, which obviously we expect, won't return until Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening. So they will only have one full training session before the Fulham Cup game. Not quite sure on Chris Richards and Matt Turner. I've not looked at when their games are, but yes, that's what the outlook is for the next couple of weeks. There will be the friendly against HamKam on Thursday. We expect to see a few different faces in that game. Nathaniel Clyne, Caleb Cupora, a return for Joel Walter action. Matheus França likely to get some substantial minutes. Hindolo Mustafa will be travelling with the squad, so maybe some first senior minutes for him, albeit it's a behind closed doors friendly. You've also got Caden Rodney going there. Will Hughes will probably get some more substantial minutes as he won't be called up for his national team. And he didn't play in the Premier League game. Maybe they'll be managing the minutes of Dean Henderson, Adam Wharton, and Mark Gayey, because we expect all of those, certainly Henderson and Gayey and possibly Adam Wharton, to be called up to Thomas Tuchel's first England squad.
Don't be so sure about Hughes, mate. I mean, Prime Hughes or Prime Bellingham, I know who I'm taking.
Well,
That's all I'm saying.
I tweeted during the, I think it was the Millwall game or the Aston Villa game, whatever game Tuchel was at. He was having a natter with Parrish in the director's box during the game, and I tweeted Steve Parrish and Thomas Tuchel having a good chat in the director's box. Can only assume they're chatting about how they'll manage Will Hughes's minutes across national team and club football.
There you go. There you go. I know who I'm taking. Now, speaking of a European behind closed doors camp in Marbella, there is, of course, the big E word that we've alluded to at the start of this pod. Pat, I think we need to look at the table here and get, you know, semi-realistic and check a bit about our hopes and expectations about the dreaded E word. But I do want to get your thoughts about overall prospects.
Yeah, I think there's reason to think that's a potential possibility. We're only 6 points behind Villa in seventh, and they have a game in hand on us. We're only five behind eighth, and it's more than likely that eighth place is going to get an extra European qualification spot with England's performances in European competition this season. So the way we're playing, the eye test, the numbers, everything, the way we've been playing for really all of 2025 has shown that this team has the ability to play with anybody that it comes up across. They have the ability to take 3 points from anybody on their day. They have the ability to take 3 points when it's not their day, which is so important when you're trying to chase and finish, you know, upper half of the table into those possible European spots. So it's a tough fixture list down after really these next two, and It's a really tough fixture list, but as I said, I don't think there's a reason to really fear anybody. I think Glasner has us set up in a way that we can expect to be at least competitive and hope we can get a couple bounces and get some points that we deserve along the way.
So, Bobby, is it time for me to start booking my horse across Azerbaijan? Is it starting, to look like I'm going to have to go to Kazakhstan? Are you coming with me to Finland, Belarus, Latvia? Where are we thinking? Where are we booking the Airbnb then? Or is it a different sort of flavor from you?
I really considered like a this is my house entry, please, when you started talking about Kazakhstan. But I won't offend listeners with my attempt at a Borat accent. But no, I think the best way to qualify for Europe will be through the FA Cup. Win the FA Cup, win 3 years of football, and you get yourself a spot in the Europa League. There is a chance in the league. I think it's 5 points off a European place at the moment. Albeit unlikely to break into that chasing pack if Palace have a similar end to the end of this season as they did last season, then there's every chance. They've got themselves into a good position, obviously already safe, 39 points, exactly where you want to be in March. If I think if you would have offered the pessimistic Palace fan to be on 40 points or close to 40 points in March, they would have probably taken it. So yeah, I think they're in a really good position. Sometimes the season has been frustrating. The performances haven't always been pretty. They've required a lot of grit and determination at times. But ultimately, this second half of the season, Palace have lost 3 games in 17, I think is the stat now. And it looks really good. Things are on the up. Oliver Glasner's doing a great job. And they keep moving on and they look to get to an FA Cup semi-final and try and get as many points in the league as possible.
I'll tell you what, the general feel good has to be there because I mean, you look at our overall distribution of wins, losses, draws. It's 10-9-9, which is obviously average in the grand scheme of things. But you look at the distribution of where those 9 losses came from. Almost all of them, as you say, came in that horrible run at the start of the season. And beyond that, it's pretty much been happy spells for the most part, with the odd annoying week here or there. I'm thinking, Fulham at home, Everton at home, those sorts of games. But really, it's been a really enjoyable season, for the vast majority of it, and certainly one of the best I can have as a Palace fan for some time. I mean, you start to throw in a potential trip to Wembley. I mean, this, as we said at the start, a lot to be excited about. So my question to you, Bobby, is, where do you actually think we'll end up overall in terms of the table placement?
Anywhere between 8th.
No, give me a number.
No. Anywhere between 8th and 12th, really. If they finish 8th, obviously, if cups go their way and things, that would be a European place. I think maybe 11th or 12th is probably the most likely. What I would say is probably getting to Wembley and maybe breaching the 50-point mark would be a very successful season. Palace have never done it in the Premier League, 49 obviously being their record. So if they can break that record and increase their points and make it their best ever Premier League season, I think that would have been a success. I think Glasner would take that as a success, especially if they get to Wembley. And yeah, it's a good building block for next season. There could be a few sales in the summer and the squad needs strengthening. But the foundations are there and things do look good at Selhurst Park. And if they can get that summer transfer business right, I don't see any reason why they can't be competing for a European spot next season, as Forest have done this season, as Bournemouth have done, as Brighton have done, etc.
I mean, we need to get 11 points for our next 10 games. I mean, surely we do that, barring any kind of crazy slowdown in form, right?
Yeah, I think we do. I think we set the record for most points in the Premier League for the club. And if I think we're finished, I think Bobby's 100% correct. I think the best way for us to get to Europe this season is through the cup. I think that beginning of the season did too much to hurt our chances, and I still am very confident we're going to finish this season strongly, go through the spring, not maybe as on fire as last spring, but playing at a high level. But I can see us maybe finishing 9th, I think, would be like our ceiling right now. And just looking at the table, there's a lot of points we'd have to make up that I don't think is realistic, even if we're flying. So 9th, 10th, I love that.
Just building on what Pat said, I think the real positive that Palace have got is they've actually got to play the teams above them. So if they were to, breach into the top half, get maybe steal one of the smaller European places, 8th, 7th kind of thing, they've got the games to do that. Yes, they're going to be tough, but to get into those positions, you have to beat those teams. So Palace have got the games. It should be an enjoyable end to the season. And yeah, if they can breach, as I mentioned, 50 points, it will be a successful season in my view. At the moment, 10 wins, 9 draws, 9 defeats. I think that's a really good record for a team like Crystal Palace. Wins, more wins than losses. A positive record, definitely positive record. I'm running really well in the league, so yeah. Glasner, as I mentioned in my previous monologue, is doing a fantastic job.
I mean, put it this way, I think more broadly as football fans, we are dreamers by nature. So who could really shoot us for that? I mean, the way I see it at a personal level, my family have been Palace fans for over 100 years, since the 1920s when a lot of my family emigrated to that part of the ground. And, there's a story about, I think my great grandma used to pick up wooden chairs back at the old Selhurst and hit the guys in front of her with that chair when they scored. So it's one of those things that has always been a part of my family's heritage. And it means so much to me and the community that Palace are in. And not to be self-indulgent, but the way I see it is if that first European game comes, if it does, when it comes, whatever, if it's in Karabag, if I have to go to Baku, I will be there because of that, because it's not just the Palace fans that are now being honoured with such a competition like that, but the ones that aren't with us anymore. And that's huge for the heritage of this area and for what it means to everyone. So I think whether you're kind of a newer fan like Pat from abroad, whether you're a local fan, like me, who's then moved away and so on. I think it just means so much to people all over the world. And I think to even be talking about this, where we have two ambitious but possible routes in, I think is a huge, huge achievement for this football club. And I'm really, really eager to see where we go. But just before we end, Bobby, I wanted to.
If you look at the team, so if you think of it as a chasing European pack for the minor places of Brighton, Villa, Bournemouth, Newcastle, and Fulham, and you throw Palace into there because they're only 4 points behind Bournemouth, 5 points behind Villa, having played a game less than Villa by the end of next week. Palace will have a game in hand of all of those teams apart from Newcastle, but other than Fulham, Palace have still got a game to play against all of those teams. So they can definitely breach that gap with a couple of big wins. So I wouldn't rule it out completely. I would say it's an optimistic way to look at things, but we're all football fans, as you mentioned, so why not be optimistic? On a bit of a funny note, would it take us longer to get to Karabag than Pat, or would Pat get there quicker?
Depends how fast I can run these days. No, seriously, I have no idea. That's a really good one. I mean, it's like it's proper middle of the earth that.
Yeah, it's like a European game that the American can get to before we can.
That would be damn funny, that. I'd take that.
Probably go through London. I'd probably see you there. Right through London.
No, you probably would actually. You can't remember that. Ask God. This is what I mean. This is what I want more of. More
Wow.
dreaming, more logistic planning. Yeah, go
So
on. Yeah,
saying
goes
that,
that one.
did you see the Arsenal fans? No, the Chelsea fans when they played Astana? It took them like 2.5 days to travel there.
I'd do it. I'd do it. I'd absolutely do it. I mean, that is a good question. I mean, I did say to Pat one day, it'd be nice for me to fly over to Miami because not Miami or Florida more generally, but probably Miami. Because I do want to get out there. I'm a huge Miami Vice fan, which is my sad new thing. So I did say I'd like to do it at some point. But now I'm thinking, do we meet up
Oh
in like the
no,
caucus? Like maybe that's what we do for this pod. No, we can dare to dream, we can dare to dream. But back on the floor, we have to talk about one more thing, Bobby. I want to bring you in on this because I know you're quite a close to all things England as well, particularly when it comes to Crystal Palace. So I know you were talking a lot about times that Tuchel has come to Selhurst Park, of which there's been a couple of occasions now he's been spotted there. So I think we all know he's definitely watching Adam Wharton, but I think there's definitely a few more players that will be in contention for that England squad. So just talk me through what he's probably thinking right now about where he sees the Palace England starlets at the moment.
yeah, so twice Thomas Tuchel has been to Selhurst Park in the last 10, 11 days. Obviously, that Aston Villa game was the first one. Quite a few Palace England talents on the show, notably Adam Wharton's first start in the Premier League since returning from injury. If you look at it from the Villa perspective as well, Morgan Rodgers, Ollie Watkins, those kind of players. So that was a good game for him to visit to try and see quite a few England talents. And then he appeared again at Selhurst Park. For the win over Ipswich, when Adam Wharton had a particularly good game. His passing accuracy was slightly down, around like the 60% mark, with some miscued passes in that second half. But beside that, I mean, it was a pretty faultless performance from him. But besides Adam Wharton, if you look at Dean Henderson, obviously he will have a case to make to become England's number one, as I've mentioned a couple of times. England very short for a left back at the moment, with Luke Shaw's long-term injury, with Ben Chilwell not playing any football, Lewis Hall out for the rest of the season. Lewis Hall, I'm a huge fan of. I for me, he was nailed on to be England's starter at left back. Maybe you look at someone like Levi Colwill being capable of playing that role, or otherwise Leif Davies at Ipswich, but I doubt that one very much. So other than that, you'd be looking at playing a right back there, or someone who's done very well in a Palace shirt over the last couple of weeks in Tyrick Mitchell. Every time, he's kind of knocked on the door of the England squad, it's been shut very quickly. I would like to see him at least given a chance to show what he can do. I do, as I've always mentioned, think he's slightly limited on the attack and in a five at the back system, as England will likely play under Thomas Tuchel. At that stage and at that level, I don't think he'll be. I just think he's that little bit of a level below it. But with the shortage in that position at the moment, I think it would be a good opportunity to see what he's about on the international stage. Mark Gay, outstanding at the Euros, England's best player by far. And you'd expect him to be one of the first names on the team sheet after Harry Kane and Jude Bellingham. You look further along, and as we mentioned, you've got Adam Wharton, who I think is the natural answer for that central midfield role to partner Declan Rice. I don't think Kobbie Mainoo has been anywhere near as good as he was last season. I think Adam Wharton has probably got that little bit more quality about him than Kobbie Mainoo, even though he did a great job at the Euros. So I think you've got Curtis Jones, who's obviously had a pretty good season at Liverpool. There's a couple of others as well. Maybe Jude Bellingham could play that role, albeit I think maybe he'll probably play more advanced, maybe as a 10. It just depends how Tuchel works his 3-4-3, whether it's like a 3-4-2-1 like Palace play, or an out-and-out 3-4-3 with wingers. So that'd be something you can experiment with. But Adam Wharton, Tuchel's been to watch him twice now. I'm sure he'd been very impressed with everything he's done in an England, sh sorry, in a Palace shirt, and I'm sure he'll be able to transfer that into an England shirt. And the last one is obviously Ebrecheze. Now, I think his time has kind of run out in an England shirt. If you look at now the rise of Ethan Nwaneri, he looks someone who will probably be ahead of him in the attacking pecking order before the World Cup. You've obviously got, your Sakas, your Bellinghams, your Fodens. You've also got Morgan Rodgers, who has been absolutely outstanding. You've got Cole Palmer, albeit he's had a few tough weeks. He's a player who will be certainly in contention to be in the team on the team sheet. So I just think Ebrecheze is very slowly sliding down that pecking order with England. He hasn't had the greatest of seasons, only 2 goals in the Premier League. And I don't think, although Thomas Tuchel has spoken to him, I don't think he could justify a call up in this international break if we're talking about meritocracy. And that's the real picture of where it lies from the Palace perspective at the moment. My only one other question that I asked, and I was talking to someone about it earlier today, is whether Thomas Tuchel would actually call up Ben Chilwell. Now, my thought process is that he is fit. So Tuchel, Ben Chilwell, although he's not playing for Palace and Tyrick Mitchell is currently playing ahead of him, he is fit. He's a player who won the Champions League under Chilwell, under Tuchel at Chelsea. He is an attacking left wing back. England, obviously, as I mentioned, are short in that position. Now, like I mentioned about Eze and meritocracy, it would undermine that very early in Tuchel's England tenure. However, if he's looking ahead to the World Cup, if he's thinking that maybe Chilwell can get back to his best level, could he be an answer at left wing back for England? I'm not sure. Obviously, I think he's not playing for Palace, not because he's not good enough. I think that Mitchell hasn't really done anything in these last couple of games to justify being dropped. I thought the Ipswich game actually would have been a good one to have played Ben Chilwell, because when you think about it, Tyrick being the more defensive wing back and Ben being the more attacking wing back, the Ipswich game where you want to take the game to the team, it would kind of favour that attacking left wing back. But Ty did well in that game, and as I say, gone a bit off course now. But Ben Chilwell could be an interesting one to look at when Thomas Tuchel names his squad come Friday.
So, Bobby, just to give one last bit to you, I just want like a one number answer, nothing complicated. How many Palace players do you think make the next England squad? Just a number.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide between two and three at the moment. Obviously, Palace had the most players at the Euros, which is a tremendous achievement. It was put to Oliver Glasner in his post-match press conference, and he put all the plaudits on to Dougie Freeman and Steve Parish for their recruitment and being able to have these quality players within the squad. So my elongated way of getting to the answer is I'm going to say three, being optimistic: Henderson, Gaye, and Wharton. And definite two in Henderson and Gay.
Pat, same answer.
I don't think he's going to call up Morton yet. So two.
You've got to remember that Tuchel's on a short-term contract. He's only got very limited international breaks. Obviously, he's got to qualify first, but very limited international breaks before the 26 World Cup. So he is going to want the squad that he is taking to America as much as he can together. Obviously, he's limited with injuries. Players like Saka being out, Hall being out, but he's got to. If Wharton's 80% fit and he sees him as a player who could potentially start at the 2026 World Cup, he needs to be in every England squad. Obviously, they've spoken about Ethan Nwaneri and Miles Lewis-Skelly spending some time as the 21s before they're stepping up. But in my view, if you view they're going to be players who could play a big part stateside to potentially win England their first World Cup since 1966, then they should be in and around the senior team as much as possible, because there's very limited time to get your tactical nous over to the players when you're an international manager, let alone when you're only going to have five or six international breaks with them before a tournament.
So, Pat, I'm speaking away from England here. Obviously, a number of internationals are now within the Palace squad. I think probably the most you've ever had in our club's history, certainly our modern history. The likes of Daichi Kamada for Japan, obviously, your boy Chris for the USM NT, that I can now say it. That's great. Matt Turner, notwithstanding, of course. And then our two Colombians, Daniel Munoz and Jefferson Lerma, just to name a few. So, in terms of overall internationals, I mean, first of all, JP's injury comes at a very, very poor time because, I mean, he was arguably in the France conversation, but certainly for those names I mentioned previously, I mean, it's a big window for those guys, right?
Certainly, and it's a pretty great thing for Crystal Palace to be able to boast that we have all these internationals that are playing for us. And yeah, for a little bit closer to my heart, obviously with Richards and Turner, Richards should be a nailed-on starter as he continues to be playing well and staying fit. Turner has started all the matches. He started the previous match in the last window, but we don't know if Pochettino is maybe going to want to try someone else that has actually been getting minutes. I would hope that Turner would continue to show that he's capable of what he can do and be a serviceable number two behind Henderson for us as long as we have him on loan. And yeah, the Colombian players, Munoz, Lerma, they continue to play competitively and look good. It's a pretty cool thing to see. And it's not only just European players, it's not only just North American, it's South America, it's Asia with Daichi Kamada in Japan. So we're getting a big global footprint of representation for a club like Palace. I think that's pretty awesome.
It's a sign of our pedigree, isn't it? I think that's kind of the watchword for me with Oliver Glasner. If I'm summing up how he has us feeling in his first full season in charge, it's pedigree. It's the tactical nous. It's the attention to detail. It's the raising of the standards both individually and collectively that I don't think we've ever really seen since promotion. And it's an exciting ride, and I'm delighted to be part of it, as I'm sure you guys are. And speaking of a delight, it's been a pleasure having you guys on as well. Really, really good speaking to you as always. And I think again, it's nice that we have this run of episodes where we can just be optimistic. And I mean, when's the last time we've had sustained optimism as a fan base, right? Rhetorical question, obviously, but it goes to show how far we've come. So once again, thank you very much for coming on. Pat, any closing thoughts, closing words?
No, just I think that we have a good opponent in Fulham, but we showed how we can beat them, and we can get that win when we come back and a trip to Wembley for a second trip at a possible final and FA Cup. Stay optimistic, stay trusting in Glasner. I think he's one of the best we've ever had, and he's going to continue to show why that is.
Definitely exciting times. It shows you I need to pay attention to the fixture list. I keep thinking we have Southampton immediately after the break. We don't. Anyway, that's my own problem. Bobby, again, it was always a real pleasure getting your thoughts and your detail. Really, really good to have you at the heart of a lot of key things going on at Palace at the moment. So really, really good to get your takes as well. Any closing words, mate?
No, nothing really. Enjoy the 3 week break without Palace. Don't become too disheartened during the international break. I know quite a lot of people don't enjoy it. I'm actually quite a fan of it. I like watching England play. It's going to be an interesting new dawn under Thomas Tuchel. And yeah, Palace back for a big one straight after the international break, Saturday. 12:15 kickoff, Craven Cottage, Fulham, FA Cup quarter final, a spot at Wembley, up for grabs. Games don't get much bigger, apart from the semi final and final, which Palace hope to be in. And it's going to be a should be an exciting end to the season.
You mean when, not hope? I mean, listeners won't see this, but Pat and Bobby, you can see I've shaved my hair off, which I do every summer, apparently. I've decided that I'm growing my hair out and I'm not cutting it until we win a cup, which is great because it means I've only got to grow it out for 2 months. And on that wonderful bombshell, thank you very much for listening, guys. If you haven't checked us out already at thepalaceway.com, we post news analysis, obviously all the podcast latest, and a whole lot more there. We even have our own Wardle game. Really, really be great if you could check that out. And obviously, if you're not following us on socials, please do so at Instagram and Twitter or X at The Palace Way, The Palace Way podcast on TikTok, and we're available wherever you get your podcasts, of course. If you could also do so, please leave a 5-star review. 5 would be preferable. If you don't want to leave 5, that's okay. Any and all feedback is welcome. It really, really helps us improve. But other than that, all that's left for me to say is again, thank you to our co-host Pat for coming on, and Bobby Manzi of The New Shopper for his great insight. Stay safe, have a good week, everyone. Enjoy the long break and up the palace.